Joining us now in the studios of the Muslim Community Radio is Superintendent David Eardley from the Bankstown Local Area Command. Greetings to you, Superintendent. It's an absolute pleasure to host you on the program.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, Superintendent, the current political climate, heightened terror alerts and escalated tension in Australia following counter-terrorism raids has in fact contributed to an increase in racial abuse, in particular towards Muslim women. How would you describe the rate of incidents that have transpired in Australia? And that, of course, is bearing in mind that a large number of incidents go unreported.
I don't have the exact figures as far as reporting goes, but I certainly agree with you that it's a vastly underreported issue. Now, we're very mindful and very concerned about the fact that Muslim women in particular have been harassed, intimidated. There are some instances where they've been spat upon by simply walking down the street and getting along with their daily lives. That's obviously a concern for us. You know, we've had many meetings with the community and the community leaders, together with the leadership, I would put, such as the Muslim Women's Association. And we've continually reinforced the need that women need to have confidence in the police. They need to have confidence in reporting to us. You know, there appears to be quite a discrepancy between the reporting on social media compared to what's actually reported to us. It makes it very hard for us to get a handle on what's accurate, you know, and get an understanding of the rate of incidents, you know, if at all. What I need to stress to the community is have confidence in your police. You know, we are getting a better understanding of the community issues. You know, we've worked tirelessly, particularly over the last several months, to engage and get a better understanding. You know, we can't do it alone, and we keep saying that. My message to the community is please have confidence in your police, because that's exactly who we are. We represent you, and we're there to service your needs, including if you can't walk down the street or there's circumstances when people have been aggressive to you, whether they've spoken with rude language, whether they've spat upon you, those types of things we can't put up with. We simply can't condone, and we won't. But let me encourage everyone, please, if you are subjected to that type of behaviour, you must report it to the police. Give us an opportunity to help you and give us an opportunity to work through these issues to try and stamp it out.
Yes, that's definitely correct. It's all about a collaborative effort by the entire community as a whole, working together to ensure that the message is clear and the message is available. Now, Superintendent, dealing with an incident of racial abuse can be quite terrifying, especially for women who encounter such an incident. How is a person encouraged to respond during a racial attack, and sometimes even when it's involving threats of violence?
What I would urge the listeners to do is not respond to the person who is trying to engage with you in such a negative and destructive way. Ignore them as best you can. Take some shelter. If it's on a public street and it's near shops, go inside the shop. Seek some type of shelter from the abuse, and report that to the police straight away. If you're being intimidated, ring 000. The police will respond as quickly as we can, but you do not, please do not suffer this abuse. I cannot stress that highly enough. If you're in a public space, if it might be the railway station, seek shelter within the railway station. If it's a shopping centre, seek shelter, again, away from the public space. Go somewhere you feel safe. I guess it's a very unfortunate indictment of the community at the moment that women particularly can't walk down the street and feel that they can't walk down safely. And not only are we responsible for dealing with actual incidents of crime, but one of our main responsibilities is dealing with the perception of fear. Now, something doesn't necessarily have to happen for people to feel unsafe or have that raised fear. That's something that we need to address. Now, that may well be simply through a heightened police presence. Sometimes people see police, they think something's gone wrong. A lot of the times, one of our main strategies is making sure we have a visible presence in the community just to reassure the community and reduce that level of fear. So just because you see uniformed police doesn't mean something's happened.
Yeah.
We're actually out and about making sure something doesn't happen and providing that safety, that security, that feeling you can walk down the street quite safely is really important to us.
That is absolutely important. And if it does help women and if it does diffuse any type of fear, then I'm sure the police will make sure to comply with that. Now, we touched on this briefly before, and I understand that police take all reports of racist attacks very seriously, and their goal is to alleviate fear in the community regarding incidents motivated by racism. But how do we convince and reassure those who have a fear of reporting or think there is no point or benefit in reporting to the police?
I guess it's about the police convincing the community that we're there for them. You know, it's a very strong community sense of the police as part of the community. We're working very hard to try and continue to break down those barriers. In actual fact, we have a specific section within the New South Wales Police Force that deals with what we term bias-motivated crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone is abused or intimidated or assaulted or subjected to unfair treatment, might be a handicap or a disability, that's what we term a bias-motivated crime, and we take that very, very seriously. I do understand that people have come from lands where authority is viewed in less than a positive light. I understand that. I get that. What I'm trying to stress is that we're not like that. Now, we have worked very hard in the areas of customer service. We've worked very hard in the areas of victim follow-up. I'm urging the listeners in the community to have confidence in their police and give us the opportunity to work for them and prove that we're not like the authority figures back home. In actual fact, we do care, and we do care very much about our community.
Of course, and we should also stress to people that by reporting it, you may be able to prevent these incidents from happening to someone else. So your reporting plays a fundamental role in gathering data to ensure that such an incident wouldn't happen to someone else. Now, what is the time frame within which complaints or reports can be lodged?
There's no time frame. Now, if something happened to you a week ago, if something happened to you a month ago and you feel it was significant, please report it. A lot of our activities, a lot of our strategic direction is based upon the incidents of reported crime. How we forecast our policing activities, how we know to be in the right areas at the right time is based on our prediction, but part of that main data that we use is previous incidents. So if we have an issue or a spate of certain types of crimes happening in an area, we know we can work out the general time, the general place that mm-hmm. these things have been prevalent, and then we can overlay our resources to try and address those issues. We try and be one step ahead of the crime or the unsavoury type of behaviour. Now, if we don't have that data to base that forecasting on, it makes it very hard. And we try and use a science about it. It's not so much guesswork.
Mm-hmm.
But we rely on the information provided by the community to allow us to try and predict accurately where and when we need to be.
Mm-hmm. So I can see that gathering accurate data is of value to the police. Now, we also know that bystanders can play a critical role in standing up to racism when it occurs. What would you also recommend to those who are ever to witness a particular incident involving racial vilification or abuse to do?
Yeah, no, what you say is quite true. It can be an extremely traumatic experience to be subjected to that type of abuse. The last thing you're focusing on is what this person looks like or what car they may be in and the sort of information that we would consider vital. If you happen to see one of these incidents, whether it's someone being assaulted, whether it's someone being intimidated or subjected to clearly racial or cultural or religious abuse, take note. Take note what they look like, what they're wearing, how old they are, what sort of car they're in, and particularly the registration of that vehicle. And mm-hmm. have confidence in that information is vital to police. Mm-hmm. And have confidence in passing it on. If you are walking down the street and you see someone being physically assaulted, particularly a woman, try and take the steps as best you can to try and protect that person. And I'm not saying engage in a physical confrontation with the attacker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying try and, as best you can, intercede and provide some level of protection to that person who's being subjected to that abuse, without exposing yourself as best you can to any heightened level of danger. But please, as soon as you see that incident, the first thing you need to do is ring 000. What you can do as safely as you can for yourself. But ringing the police is your first priority. Offering some type of assistance to that, particularly in the circumstance of a woman, offering what sort of assistance you can to alleviate her predicament.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people don't want to get involved. But at the very least, please ring 000 and allow us to come and take charge of that situation.
Yep, absolutely. And at the very heart of that incident of racial abuse, the person will feel a sense of isolation. So it's absolutely crucial to ensure them that they have your support and that you will find support from the police as soon as you can. Also, Superintendent, many people don't actually have enough confidence to visit a police station. It could be quite frightening for them, and it could be very difficult for them to report any incident because it fuels feelings of anxiety and stress. So what would you say to such people?
Yeah. In those circumstances, we can get around that sort of perception of fear or your anxiety around police stations. We can come and visit you at a place where you feel comfortable with. If it's a situation where we have a Muslim woman who is isolated on her own, we will send a police woman to come and deal with you and take the report of what has happened. We understand the cultural sensitivities, and as best we can, we will try and accommodate that. We're very fortunate in having two talented multicultural liaison officers mm-hmm. at Bankstown who are both women.
Yes.
At the very least, they can assist and provide some advice and guidance if the person isn't comfortable speaking directly with police, and provide them the right of, and correct advice how to best deal with their situation. End of the day, more likely than not, you will have to speak to a police officer, but we will do it in a circumstance that makes you feel as comfortable as possible. And we certainly won't place you in a position where you're either embarrassed, feeling uncomfortable, or intimidated in itself. We'll absolutely do our best to accommodate your needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the last thing the police want to do is heighten your stress levels and make you feel intimidated. They want to provide you with the preferred support, and with that comes the availability of women who can gladly accommodate to those who feel more comfortable to speak to a woman. Now, I'm not sure if you are aware of this, but there is actually a new Speak Out hotline that has been newly launched to protect people from racial harassment, intimidation and abuse, where they can call and report any incidents. So do you think this is quite a positive outcome?
I think it's a very positive outcome, because I think we're going to have reporting of incidents that would not normally be reported to authorities. And the beauty of the hotline is it provides support to the people who've been subjected to that abuse. It's very easy for police to look at things very simplistically. We look at the crime, we investigate the crime, we try and put the perpetrator mm-hmm. before the courts. A lot of the things we're doing now is heavily investing in our victim follow-up. We're getting better at it, we really are, and it's through the support of officers and people such as our multicultural liaison officers, our domestic violence officers, the people who have advanced skills in those areas
mm-hmm.
in being able to provide a better service. But it's also that the relationships that we develop through a lot of times our non-government agency support agencies. So the Muslim Women's Association, for example, has been supportive in trying to
mm-hmm.
Engage with us in areas that we can still work on with particularly Muslim women. There are other areas such as Mary's Place and other domestic violence support services that we've been reaching out to for help and support in that area. There's still a long way to go. those support areas are particularly the refugees and domestic violence support services, generally aren't Islamic-based. They're a general support service that's there for the whole of the community. So we try and do our best, particularly being mindful of the needs of Muslim women, to reach out to the right areas.
Yeah, I'm sure these initiatives work as a fundamental mechanism against fear or isolation, and they seek to provide the support they require. Now, Superintendent, another imperative issue is that sometimes the victim fears that if the perpetrator finds out about the report, they will impose additional harm. So if the person was to report about the incident that a particular person did, then this victim fears that if the perpetrator finds out, then he will be in much more severe trouble. What would you say in that situation?
That's actually a very good question. It's a very, very good issue you raise. Domestic violence and abuse of women is slightly different, because we're very mindful of the protections that need to be placed around that individual. In a situation where, if it's a domestic situation, for example, if a woman's been abused or physically assaulted, our preference, we'll investigate that matter and we'll put that person before the court. We'll also seek the protections of a apprehended violence order for that person. Now, the orders can be very specific about the types of protections it offers. It can exclude a person from a premises. It can keep a person away from the other person who's in need of the protection. And it gives us an opportunity to enforce that if there's any type of breach. It also gives us the opportunity to case manage, for want of a better term, the victim and the offender, because a lot of times the person or the side that's forgotten about in these equations, particularly domestic violence, is the perpetrator. We need to work with the abuser to work out why that abuse is happening. Now, in the Muslim community, that may well also engage some sheikhs or imams or through the local mosque to provide that mentoring and guidance in a spiritual and religious basis. In certain circumstances, that's absolutely appropriate. But that happens concurrently or at the same time as the matter may well be before the court. Domestic violence is something that we treat very seriously, because the consequences, if we don't, can be quite tragic for the whole family. As far as physical violence in a non-domestic situation, it's very similar. We will investigate. If we identify offences being committed, we'll place that person before the courts. We will then put an apprehended violence order around the victim, if it's required, to offer that level of protection, to keep that person away from them. It may be simple as stopping them contacting them, stopping them attending where they live and work, that type of arrangement, but it gives the person or the victim that level of protection. But we'll certainly work with that. We're very mindful, again, some of the intricacies and delicacies around the Muslim faith, and particularly for women.
Right, and we know that racist violence is the most serious expression of racism. But racism, as you know it, can take absolutely many forms, like name-calling or verbal abuse or harassment, intimidation, you name it. So do police also consider those forms as incidents that should also be reported?
Yeah, yes, we do. Now, we understand that words can be as damaging as a physical assault. There's no question about that. The fear, the damage that can be done in the community, the way it raises anxiety and fear, it could be catastrophic for the well-being of a community. Again, if I just go back to the social media aspect of the moment, when you have such significant reporting from, let alone mainstream media, on issues, you have unverified, unfiltered reporting, significant reporting on social media, and that can spread like wildfire. And the danger is when it contains inaccuracies or when it contains blatant untruths deliberately to try and manipulate the community, to try and raise concern and fear. That is absolutely catastrophic to a community. And the hard part is there's no real controls over social media. So people can type what they want. It's the old keyboard warrior type mentality.
Exactly.
You know, and sometimes it's with an absolute malicious intent, but they don't understand the consequences of a simple post.
That's right.
Can create that much anxiety in a community. It's not funny. All of a sudden, people think, whatever instant the reporting social media is about, they think it's happening in every street, they think it's happening in every corner. People take it as fact, and very rarely is a social media post based on absolute accurate fact.
That's right.
And it's so dangerous.
It sure is. And while the internet can be a useful tool, it can also be a very damaging one indeed. And sometimes unnecessary fear is being incited over social media, which in turn causes so much chaos within the community. But of course, these incidents and attacks have caused a climate of fear infusing many Muslim communities. What would you say to those who question whether they should leave their houses for fear of being targeted?
I would say that it's a very sad day when we come to a point where people don't have the confidence to walk out their front door and get on with their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in a country that people have a right, and in fact an absolute right, to walk down the street and get about their daily lives without any fear of any repercussion, without any fear for their safety. You know, I think as a society, we've worked very hard and we've come a long way to ensure that that happens. Now, if this level of fear is created, and generally speaking, there's been a lot of malicious activity, particularly through social media, Chinese whispers and the like, there seems to be some type of agenda at times behind the posts that are deliberately trying to elicit a response. Now, I'd ask everyone just to make sure you sort through fact and fiction. But can I reassure everyone in the community, we live in a very safe and vibrant community, absolutely safe to walk down the street and go about your daily lives. Having said that, if you are walking after dark, walk in well-lit areas. Just use some common sense. But please do not think that you can't get about your daily lives. If we start changing the way we live our lives and we don't do things that we would normally do, the people who are deliberately trying to create this fear in the community are starting to win.
Exactly.
Now, as a community, we can't allow that.
Yep, sure thing. We can't allow them to have dominion and have control. We should definitely stand up to ourselves and stand up to the truth to ensure the safety of the entire community. Now, I'm aware that we should report such incidents to the police, of course, as we keep emphasizing. But what if it's the police officer himself who is inciting racist comments against you? I mean, just a few weeks ago, a young man claimed that a police officer made racist comments towards him. Who would you report or complain to in such a case?
We have very clear and robust complaint handling procedures within the New South Wales Police Force. Your first port of call should be trying to speak to a senior officer at the local police station, whether it be an inspector or a duty officer. We have the customer assistance line, which is a toll-free number you can ring and report the complaint, and they will take that information from you and pass it on to the commander of the police station where it alleged to have occurred. The New South Wales Ombudsman also will take a report of your complaint, and all that information is available on the respective websites.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the New South Wales Police Force website has a link to allow you to report. The New South Wales Ombudsman has a link and allows you to report. What I would stress is if you believe you have been treated unfairly by any police officer, please let us know. Because as an organisation, we pride ourselves on our professionalism. Even if it's a bit of a mistake in understanding or communication, we need to work through it and find out why it's happened. And if we've done the wrong thing, we need to apologise and we need to counsel our police. There are occasions when it is just a breakdown of communication and a misunderstanding. But again, if you feel you've been treated poorly, or the police officer hasn't given you the service that you deserve, please let us know and we will investigate.
And in saying that, individuals within the community shouldn't lose any type of hope or confidence in the police, because those police who make racist comments towards some people may be a minority. So such police sometimes taint the dedicated members of the force and therefore cause some people to not rely on the police.
And we are human. We are representatives of the community and we come from the community. But again, we are human. So when my expectation of my police is when we engage with the community, whether it be for a good reason or when someone may have broken a law, we need to talk, and our main weapon is communication. So we need to engage and communicate in an appropriate way, but also in a very respectful way. You know, we have what we term a tactical escalation model. Now, if talk doesn't work, or if you try to engage nicely with someone and they are angry, or clearly that the communication is not working, we have a tactical escalation model which we must go through. So you can't all of a sudden go from 0 to 10 and then expect to be able to back down and resolve that situation with peaceful dialogue.
Yep.
So we really need to talk to people. That's the main thing. Get an understanding of what the issues are and respond appropriately. And that's a word we use a lot. Appropriate. Whatever the police do in every circumstance must be appropriate to that circumstance.
Yes, and just before we do conclude our discussion, we know one of the issues today is the misconception about Muslims and Islam, that they are associated with extremism. What advice would you give to the wider community about this issue?
It's a shame that that type of rhetoric is being spread. It really is, and a lot of times it's spread through ignorance and fear. The community we have in the southwest of Sydney, the Islamic community, is incredibly rich, and they're a wonderful community. And it's simply not true. You know, when you look at the small numbers of people who may hold extreme views, who may not agree with the vast majority of Australians, it's very hard for the Muslim community, because when you look at some of the mainstream media reporting, when you look at some of the social media reporting, it's very easy to form the opinion that everyone's being tarred with the same brush. Really, really difficult for the community to be subjected to that. We need to continue to reinforce, as police, we continue to reinforce that that's not the case. I think when you look at the way reporting has been made on overseas events, religion is never mentioned in the communication, in the way we speak. When you look at some of the things that are happening, this is a criminal issue. It's a caring and diverse community. But it's incredibly frustrating. But it's also frustrating for me, because I see what the community is being subjected to. But all I can say is one of the best things about our country is tolerance. And the Muslim community has shown tolerance over the years, particularly with a lot of world events, how they've responded as a community. It's always been a caring community, and it's always been a community that's tried to do everything as peaceful, in a peaceful manner. Every time I speak to a community leader, they reinforce the fact that the events that we see unfold around the world is not indicative of the community, and we just need to continue to push that message. That is, it is a fantastic community that we should also be very, very proud of.
That's right. And just like we shouldn't judge all Muslims as extremists because of a few radicals that attempt to hijack Islam, commit mass murder, torture and rape in its name, we also shouldn't say that 23 million Australians are racist because of the actions of a few people.
That's absolutely correct. Can I just reassure your community, which is our community, of the level of support there is for the community? There is an incredible amount of support for the Muslim community, particularly within the police, but particularly within the Bankstown area. We hurt. When Bankstown has a negative connotation made upon it, it hurts us all, because I know how hard people strive to be proud of this area. The council has done an amazing job in promoting Bankstown. The community and the business community and the general community have done a wonderful job promoting this area. And every time there's a negative thing published, it hurts everyone, because I know how much everyone cares for this area and I know how hard people work trying to promote it. We just seem to be the focus at times of a lot of things. And it's a strong community. We just need to continue to work. And every time there's a hurdle, we need to get over it and continue to show the resilience mm-hmm. and tolerance that has shaped this community.
Absolutely. And that's why we call on the Muslim Australian community to be calm, exercise restraint, and to ensure that they are immediately reporting any incident of people hurling offensive and racist remarks on Muslims. And we also call on the wider community to be tolerant and, of course, understanding. And so I'd like to thank you, Superintendent David Eardley. And of course, it's definitely heartening that New South Wales Police are genuinely willing to listen to community concerns. So I thank you on behalf of 2MFM for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure.